Morning. Today's daf in Erev and Daf Nun Gimel. We're on Nun Beis Amud Beis. We're finishing up today the fourth parak of Erevin, which good chance that means that we're going to start the fifth parak of Erevin. We are on the top of the Amud, and we are finishing up a discussion yesterday based on a Mishnah Nun Beis Amud Aleph. The Mishnah Nun Beis Amud Aleph talks about the guy who's got two homes, and he pretty much every Shabbos regularly, he leaves his one home in order to go to the other home. What's the significance of that? He's now an ani, he's a poor person. Whoa, hard to cry poverty when you own two homes, usually. But in other words, in the halachic framework in which we're discussing, in terms of, can I forecast and throw my Erev ahead of where I am? So as we discussed yesterday, we had a lengthy discussion yesterday, but to make a long story very short, the halacha is, like Rav Nachman's understanding of the position of Rav Yehuda, you can do that, but only if you are traveling home. If you're not traveling home, meaning if you're starting from your home, so then you can't throw your Erev ahead of you. You could walk to the Makom Erev, and you could say Mekomi. You can put food down over there. You could send somebody else to put food down over there. But you yourself cannot throw the Erev ahead of you unless you are a traveler trying to get home. So this guy who owns two homes, and now he's leaving this house on Erev Shabbos in order to walk home, so he's an ani, and so therefore he can go ahead and cast his Erev ahead of him. What do you need to do exactly in order to show that you are leaving this house in order to go back to your other house? So that was the discussion yesterday in the Gemara, on the bottom Nun Beis Amud Aleph, a machlokus between Rabbi and Rav Yosef, whether you need a declaration, whether you need to make steps in the direction of your other home, machlokus between Rabbi and Rav Yosef, and that is where we left off the Gemara yesterday. We're on the very top of Nun Beis Amud Beis, and we're continuing now. Rabbi Meir, Omer Kol Sheyachol La'arev, Hatanina Chadazimna. Now, Rabbi Meir says for this guy, so he's stuck. Meaning, if you look back at our Mishnah Nun Beis Amud Aleph, Rabbi Meir describes how this person basically doesn't gain an erev in his other home. In between the homes, and also loses his original placement. So this is Rav Meir, and basically Rav Meir uses that term again. We're hearing it now a second time in the Masechta, Chamar Gamal. He is a donkey, he's a camel. Right? The analogy is that discussing where, because you have two possible Erevs, and we don't know which one actually is yours, so therefore you get stuck between the two of them. Neither one of them becomes your definitive Erev, and you're stuck between the two of them. Chamar Gamal. Good, that's the opinion of Rav Meir. And all the Gemara wants to know is, you know, this is the second time we're mentioning this in the Masechta. Been here, done that. Meaning, we've talked about Rav Meir and the concept of Chamar Gamal, so why bring it up again in the Masechta? Gemara asked the question, HaTanina Chadazimna, we already learned this one time, Safek Rabbi. Safek, right, remember, you set up an Erev, you set up food, and you went to visit your food on Friday night, and you saw that it wasn't there. Okay. So, or it was there and it was true when it becomes Tameh, right? And we gave a whole different set of scenarios in terms of what happened to it, but something happened to it. Now, when did it happen? I don't know. It either happened before the Ben Hashmashos period or after the Ben Hashmashos period, and of course it makes all the difference in the world. So what did we say when we learned that Mishnah? So we said it was machlokus in terms of how to treat such a suffix. Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, Omer, Mariza, Chamar Gamal. So Rav Meir is of the opinion that you're a donkey and a camel, meaning you're stuck. You're going to be stuck between these two placements of the Eruv. Or in that case, you're going to be stuck in that. Now there you only placed one Eruv, but because you don't know if it worked or if it didn't work, so consequently what that means now is that where you thought the Eruv was set up, that could be your Eruv. Where you stand currently, that could be your Makom Shvisa, and so therefore you're stuck between the two. So why review and repeat this opinion of Rav Meir again? I'm Rav Sheshes Lotei Matam de Rav Meir Safek Erev Safek Lo Erev Hu Davi Chamar Gamal. So the Gemara explains like this. Look, in that case over there, it's legitimately a Safek, meaning we don't know. You put the Erev down, you walked away, you don't know whether it was there during the Beit Hashmashos or not. So it's Safek. So I would tell you that in the case of Safek, Rav Meir says Chamar Gamal. Here, what's the Safek? There's no Safek over here. Meaning, what you're trying to do is forecast your Erev ahead of where you are. Does it work or does it not work? If there's no suffix, meaning we know that what you attempted to do, avavade lo Erev, lo avachama gamal. And in fact, according to Rav Meir, your Erev didn't work. So if your Erev didn't work, so then why should you be in this category of chamar gamal? Ela filo vade lo ir vave chamar gamal. Da acha vade lo ir veka have chamar gamal. So the Gemara says that's why over here we're going over this point again in our discussion, because over here you didn't make an eruv definitively, and yet according to Rav Meir, in this circumstance you still fall under the category of chamar gamal. Good. We start the next Mishnah. Mishiyatzah chutz l'tchum afilo am achas l'ikanes. Okay, now what if you walk outside of tchum? Even one ama outside of tchum, you can't go back in, meaning you're out. And Rabbi Elazar amar shtayim ikanes shalosh l'ikanes. So Rabbi Elazar says, well, no. Two, then you can come back in again. Why? Rabbi Elazar, consistent with what he said earlier in the Masechta, everyone who left tchum now is given four amos. Where is he relative to those four amos? He's in the center of those four amos, so therefore that affords him the ability to walk two amos in every direction. So if he's only two amos outside of his tchum, so now he could just simply walk back two amos into his tchum, and then he is re-engaged back to his original tchum. Good. That's the Mishnah. I'm Rabbi Chanina, Raglo Achas, Besocha Tchum, Raglo Achas, Chutza Tchum, Lo Yikanes. The Gemara gets as specific as it possibly can. One leg in Tchum, one leg out of Tchum, no good. Dechsivim Tashiv Mishabas Raglecha. Raglecha Ksiv. Right? It says, Raglecha, your legs. Vahatani Raglo Achas, Besocha Tchum, Raglo Achas, Chutza Tchum, Yikanes. So the Gemara says, okay, but what about another Braisa? That gives the exact same circumstance. One leg out, one leg in. It says, and that Braisa says you can't go back in. Hamani Acherim he. So the Gemara says, okay, yeah, that's it. You're right. That's a Braisa. And that Braisa is going to dispute, and that Braisa is authored by the position of Acherim. Ditani Acherim omim lamakam sherubo hu nizkar. Nizkar or nizdaker. In other words, who do you belong to? Right, who you connected to, wherever the majority of your body is going to be. So in other words, even though one leg is out of tchum, but as long as the majority of you is in one direction, so therefore you are assigned to that direction. Or raglayich karinan, meaning even though the Torah, the Navi reads raglecha, but we can read raglayich. Vatanya lo yikanes. So the Gemara says, okay, but what about the Braisa that says lo yikanes? Hu damer kachem detanya lamakam sheruba hu nizdaker. So that's like the opinion of Acherim, which is that if the majority of you is outside of the tchum, even though a small part of you, let's say a foot, is inside the tchum, but basically you are assigned to where the majority of your body is. Rabbi Elazar Omer Shtayim Yikanes Shalosh Lo Yikanes Vatanya Rabbi Elazar Omer Achas Yikanes Shtayim Lo Yikanes. Okay, numbers, a little bit of a numbers issue over here. Meaning in our Mishnah, if you're two Amas within your Tchum, according to Rabbi Elazar, you can walk back in. And as I explained, the reason why is because once you're outside of Tchum, you have four Amas, you're in the center of those four Amas, so you simply walk back in. The problem is that the Gemara quotes a Braisa, and this Braisa says that for one you can go back in, for two you can't go back in. So the Gemara says, Lo kasha hada akar chada v'kam achriti, hada akar tarte v'kam atlas. So the Gemara says, each Braisa is basically making the same point. It's just a question of from which perspective are we talking about. So if one Braisa is talking about where you left one and now you're into two Amas, the other one's talking about where you left two and now you're in the third Amma. In other words, it's just a question of the perspective of what point the Braisa is describing, but either way, it comes out now that for two Ammas you can walk back in, for three you cannot. V'atani Rav Elazar Omer, afilo Amma achas lo yikanes, kitanya hi lemodeid. So the Gemara says with the Braisa that talks about one, even one you can't go back in. So the Gemara says that's talking about the modeid, that's talking about the measure, the measurer. So for the measure, even one Amma, even if it ends up in a cave, meaning in an enclosed area, nevertheless, he will not be able to walk back into his tchum. Okay. Okay, if you are outside of your tchum and you find yourself outside of tchum by even one amma, so you cannot go back in. Rabbi Shimon gives you a larger leeway, and that is 15 ammas. Meaning, even if you're 15 ammas outside of the of the Trum, you can go back in. 15 Amos, where do we get that from? The Gemara says, Tana, Mimnei Toa Hamida. The reason we get to 15 Amos is because of the mistakes that are made by the measurers. Rashi over here goes through the math. The measurers mismeasure by a usual, by an average, 15 Amma mismeasurement. So how do we get to such a large mismeasurement every single time that you measure? It's 2,000 Ammas. You're really afforded another 15 Ammas after the 2,000. So Rashi explains, because look, as we described earlier, every time you measure with a rope. The rope that's used for measuring is 50 Ammas. So if the rope that's used for measuring is 50 Ammas, I'm measuring 2,000 Ammas. So how many times are we measuring with that rope? So we're measuring a total of 40 times. Okay? 40 times with a 50 rope Amma. Okay, now, the problem is that every time we're measuring with the rope, so what we're doing is we're holding the rope. So in other words, there's going to be a piece of rope held on our hand. Now, if we held the rope horizontally, life would be great, would be pretty good measuring. But typically what ends up happening is that basically what you hold of the rope, you're holding in your hand and you're holding that part vertically. So in other words, basically every time you measure, you're losing one tefach? No. You're losing two tefachim. Because there are two people holding the rope from each end, and so each person now is going to be taking away from the rope two tefachim. So if we're now talking about measuring the measuring 40 times, right? Every time we're measuring, we're going to be losing two tefachim, so that's going to be 80 tefachim. So 80 tefachim, 80 divided by 6, right? Is that correct math? It sounds correct.
Right? Say
12. Huh? Okay, right. I'm now realizing, everything was almost perfect, but I said that you're holding on to a tefach, so the assumption of the Gemara is that you're holding more than a tefach plus a chetzi etzba.
So,
huh? Because with the rope that we're using to measure is only 50 amas long. And then we measure with the rope, we move on to the next leg of the...
Why is that assumption that 50? Maybe
that's just how they measure. I mean, we're going to talk more about it in the fifth parak, in terms of the actual measurements. But they use the rope 50 amas. How do we... What's the source for that? I don't know. So I'm tempted to say there is no source, but, you know, I fell into that trap before. So when we get to it, we'll see again. How do we know this? Okay, just in terms of fixing up my math, it's each handhold is not just a tefach plus a half of an etzba. Good. That gets us to the numbers we need to get to. So that means now that it's 80 tefachim and plus 40 etzbaos. So 40 etzbaos gets us to another 10 tefachim, a total now of 90 tefachim. Check. 90 tefachim divided by 6, that's 15. Okay.
But doesn't that contradict the previous Mishnah?
Yeah, in other words, no, correct. Meaning the previous Mishnah doesn't agree to this. You're absolutely right. Meaning after seeing the previous Mishnah where we're talking about 2 Amas, now we're talking about 15 Amas, it could be that the previous Mishnah disagrees. Okay. Could be. Okay. Hadron Alach Mishotziu, and that ends us the fourth parak of Erevin, and we begin now the fifth parak of Erevin. As I mentioned, when we opened up the fourth parak of Erevin, and truth be told, also the third parak of Erevin as well, but really Prakim 4 and 5 of Erevin is dedicated to Trum. The topic of our parak continues to be that of Trum Shabbos. Once we get to the sixth parak of Erevin, which will be some time from now, not that bad. All right, Samach Aleph, Samach Beis. But once we get to the sixth parak, then we talk about Erev Chatzeres. And we get into a discussion of Erev Chatzeres, but for the time being, we talk today Tchum. Not a lot of halacha we're going to be discussing today. Today is going to be a lot of Agadita, as will tomorrow as well. So we get a little bit of a break from Erevin, so to say, meaning from the halachic aspect of Erevin. And we talk today mostly in Agadita as we open up the fifth parak of Erevin. But first, we start off with the Mishnah. And as I'm sure we all know, Mishnayos are giving us halach on occasion. There's Mishnah with a Gadita in it, but really the Mishnah is focusing on giving us halacha. And here we're talking about the following. Our discussion as we open up the fifth parak of Erevin is basically creating a border around the city. Meaning, as we know, once Shabbos comes, so you're circumscribed. you can only walk 2,000 amas. 2,000 amas of what? So if you're not in the city, if you're in the middle of nowhere, you're up in the mountains, so and you're literally in the middle of nowhere, you're not even in a bungalow colony. You're by yourself. So 2,000 amas from where you are. Okay? You want to be more accurate. You have 4 amas. Everyone has 4 amas. And then from those 4 amas, it's 2,000 amas in every direction. Okay, is it a radius, which is circular, or does it get squared? So we already talked about that. We noted that that was a machlokas in the Mishnah, back on Mem Tesam and Beis, and the halacha is it's squared. So in other words, it's 2,000 amas due north, east, south, and west. And then what we do is, we just simply square the corners, so that obviously now, if you're walking northeast or northwest, southeast, southwest, you get to walk approximately 2,700 amas. Good. But before we even talk about Tchum, what about if you're in a city? A city, and when we say city, we're going to assume, for the purpose of this discussion, an enclosed city. Now, an enclosed city, so how do you build a border around it for the purpose of Tchum? So you would have thought, I would have thought, what we do is we just simply follow the contours of the wall of the city. The first thing we're going to be learning in the Mishnah is, no, that's not the case. If, let's say, for example, the city is a circular city. Okay, the shape of the city is circular. Okay. So now, in terms of establishing the border of the city, we're not talking about Tchum right now. We're just talking about the border of the city for the purpose of Tchum, so everything gets squared. Everything. And furthermore, we'll make the point even stronger. Let's say the shape of the city is not circular. Let's say the shape of the city is square. The wall around the city is square, but there happens to be, let's say on the eastern side, a house is sticking out. So if a house is sticking out from the rest of the wall, as long as it's within 70 amas of the wall, so now what we could do is we could take the entire eastern border and move it out to where the exterior house is. Then what we're going to do is we're going to make lines now around the city, and that's the border of the city, followed then after that with determining Tchum after that. Okay, so far so good? You know, there was obviously much better if you saw this inside, in picture. If you have a picture book, I have a very good feeling, yeah, I have a very good feeling you can see all this in picture, but I'm just trying to explain this in an audio format. So basically that's the first point of the Mishnah, and this one Mishnah basically speaks to this very one point. Ketzad ma'abrin esa'arim. How do we literally impregnate the cities? Right, the word ibur over here comes from the word mu'ubar, with an ayin, which means pregnant. So in other words, so just like a pregnant woman, so her stomach sticks out a little bit, so too, when the city, if you have anything sticking out, so basically now it allows the city border to extend, again, along an east-west-north-south plane, to extend with that jutting out house. So Ketzam Abrim is Arim, Bayis Nechnas, Bayis Yotze, Pagum Nechnas, Pagum Yotze. So if a house is extended, or if it's not even a house, if it's just, let's say, a watchtower, Hayusham Gedudios, Gavos, Asar Tvachim, if I have any structure that's 10 Tvachim high, 10 Tvachim, because it just simply has to be a significant structure, Gusharim, Nefashos, or even if it's a graveyard. Now, I say graveyard, I don't really mean like a plot of land, but I mean like structures, mausoleum, something like that, right? Although, let's here in South Florida, they're so popular, right? That's not where we're to be buried. Anyway, but yeah, something like that. In other words, some sort of structure, some sort of edifice. Sheish ba'em ba'izdira. Again, it has to be residential, so there has to be a house nearby. Motzinas amida kenegdan va'osin osa kemin tavla merubas. So now what you do is I take the border, as I described. The eastern border goes out to the structure. The western border goes out to its most outer structure. And that's how we're going to make a border around the city. Then after that, you're going to then work on Tchum. Kedeshi and Iskar says obvious. And now what, of course, you gain is you're going to gain the corners. So on the simplest example, which I already gave, if the city is circular in shape, so you make a square around the city, right? Along the plains of northeast, southwest. And if one of the houses is jutting out, I just simply take the entire border and move it out to that house. that gives me the corners, and now when I make Tchum, I get even more corners. So in other words, you understand, by the way, we're going to gain those corners two times over. We're gaining them once when we're drawing the drawing the border around the city, and then we're going to gain border a second time when we actually are making tchum around the border of the city.
So the 70 goes after you line everything up.
Now, 70 just simply allows us to say that any structure, any house, any building that's within 70 of the city, it's considered part of the city, which then allows us to take the border and move it to that spot. If any house is outside of 70 amos of the city, that house is not considered part of the city. And so, therefore, it does not extend the border out. Okay. We start with the Gemara. Now, as I mentioned, the halachic portion of today now has officially come to an end. And for the rest of today, we speak in Agadata. But again, when I say Agadata, by the way, it's not so much stories as it is Agadic messages, Hashkafa, Darshaning of Psukim. In other words, where there's not going to be a lot of coherency or organization in terms of the daf today, as we go now cover the rest of today's daf. But what it will be is it's going to be a selection of discussions, arguments, some of them connected to our Mishnah. In fact, very little of it is connected to our Mishnah. And then the Gemara just simply segues into other discussions. Okay, you know Gemara enough, you'll know that's usually how Agadata goes. It kind of meanders. So let us begin. Rav Shmuel Chana Chatani Ma'abrin V'Chatani Me'avrin. So first of all, when you read our Mishnah, correct pronunciation of our Mishnah, is it Ma'avrin or is it Ma'avrin? Now, if you heard me say the same thing twice, that's because, as I mentioned a number of times, I don't know how to correctly pronounce. My ayins and my olives are the same. I mentioned the Rambam a number of times already. He says that if you do not know how to differentiate between your ayin and your olives, you can't daven for the Amud. Okay, one of many reasons why I do not daven for the Amud. Yeah, correct. So if you know how to pronounce your Mishnahs correctly and your ayins and your olives, so it makes a big difference whether you say ma'avrin with an ayin or ma'avrin with an aleph. What is the correct nusach of our Mishnah? Mishnahs really are the key to Torah Shabbat Peh. You have to know the Mishnah, you have to know it well, with precision. And so what Rav and Shmuel are arguing about is precisely what should be the nusach of our Mishnah. So ma didni ma'avrin... Aver. So if you say ma'avrin with an aleph, so perfect, meaning it makes sense. Meaning just like the limb of a person extends away from his body, so to this house or structure extends out of the city, right? If we could view the city like a body, it extends outside the city, which then allows us to take the border and move it outside. And then, uman detni ma'avrin, now if you have it with an ayin, kisha ubara. So it's like a pregnant woman, same basic point. Meaning, will it make a halachic difference whether it's ma'avrin with an aleph or an ayin? Doesn't seem to be. Right? I say cautiously. Doesn't seem to be that there's a halachic difference, but, in other words, it makes all the difference in the world in terms of if you want to say the Mishnah correctly. With an ayin versus with an aleph. Okay. Ma'aras ha-machpelah. And now we meander. So we were talking now about meanings of words. So now we're going to go on and discuss meanings of other words as well. We know that Avraham, when Sarah dies, purchases a field so that he could bury his wife. The field that he purchases is what's referred to as the Ma'aras HaMachpelah. Ma'aras is the cave. That we got. Machpelah. So what does that mean? So Rav Shmuel Charamar Shnei Batim Zelif Nimizeh. So Rav Shmuel have a debate in terms of how exactly it's set up. Right, for all of us who have been visited Ma'aras HaMachpelah, hard to really tell. Meaning, to us, it's a structure. Right, you've been there; it's special. It's a special place to go. Right, slightly dangerous, but very special place to go. So we just, in other words, hard for us really to tell. You know how the cave looks. We don't travel there, but anyway, we're kind of like on the situated on the top. Either way, the Amoraim debate. So one say that it's an interior room. It's an exterior room followed by an interior room. Shnei batim zu lifnei mizu. V'chan amar bayis va'aliyah al gabav. And says no. And the other position is no. That it's caves one on top of another. Now bishlam leman damar zeh al gav zehainu machpelah. Now if it's one on top of the other, that makes sense because the word kaful, kefel, means doubled over. So if it's one on top of another, then you understand the doubling. But if it's an exterior and an interior, that's not kefel. That's not double. It just simply means I walk in and I continue to walk in. So what's the language of kefel? Elamanda mishnei batim zuluf nimizumai machpelah shikfula bezugos. It means kefel over here means who's buried there? So pears are buried there. Rashi explains, I'm sure we all know, Adam Chava, Avram Sarah, Yitzchak Rivka, and Yaakov and Leah. Right? So four pairs of people are buried in Maaret HaMachpelah. Mamre Kiryas Arba, Amre Av Yitzchak, Kiryas Arba, Zugos Adam Chava. I'm sorry, it's not Rashi. I apologize. It's the Gemara. Adam Chava, Avram Sarah, Yitzchak Rivka, Yaakov and Leah. Okay, that is argument number two between Rav and Shmuel. What's the definition of the word Machpelah? Argument number three. Vahibi me Amra fell. Okay, beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha. So the real beginning starts with Avram, famine in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Avram goes down to Mitzrayim. Okay, that's how it starts. But then it continues, and warfare. Well, first of all, an argument between Avram and Lot. Okay, and Avram says to Lot, okay, you and I have to separate, right? That's you go your way, I go my way. That's Perek Yud Gimel. And then we get to Perek Yud Dalet. Perek Yud Dalet is what? War. War between the four kings and five kings. And why does it find its way into Lech Lecha? Because who was taken captive? Lot was taken captive, which is why Avram got involved. Okay. So, Vayihi Bimei Amraphel. One of the king's names is Amraphel. Rav Shmuel Charamar Nimrod Shmo. So one, again, our third machlok is between Rav and Shmuel. One says, you know who that is? That's Nimrod. The word Amraphel is really a contraction of two words, Amar and Ipil. Nimrod, as we know, we don't know based on Psukim. We know based on Medrash, but here the Gemara assumes, we all know the Medrash, where Avraham, trying to fight the thinking of idolatry, which was the prevalent thought at the time. And so Nimrod threw him into the fire. So the word Amraphel, Amar, he instructed, meaning Nimrod, and he peel and he caused Avram to go into the fire. So he peel Avram, Avinu b'soch kivshanesh. V'chan Amar Amraphel Shmo. Now, the other way to go is that Amraphel is actually his name. V'lama nikro Shmo Nimrod. Shehim rid is called ha'olam kulo alav b'malchuso. He led a rebellion against God. The word Nimrod from the word Marad. argument number four. I think we're all familiar. Rashi brings this down on Chumash. Rav Shmuel Charamar Chadash Mamash v'Charamar Shinis Kashuk Zerusav. A new king ascended over Mitzrayim. Asher lo yada Yosef. The pasuk goes on to say he doesn't know Yosef. So when we say new king, what does that mean? Does it mean new king, or maybe no new attitude? Same king. New attitude. Now, the position that says that it's a new king, so that's easily supportable by the fact that the pasuk actually says Chadash. Now, on the other hand, you can also say, no, not new king, but new attitude. Why? Because it never talks about the death of the previous king, which is strange. So it must be that it's not a new king, it's just simply a new attitude. So, on the other hand, how are you going to say that if he has a new attitude, how did he not know Yosef? He knew Yosef. Yosef da have a dummy Yosef klal. We kind of get it, meaning I'm sure we all figure this out. When he says he didn't know Yosef, it means he behaved as if he didn't know Yosef. He knew Yosef, and he should have showed a tremendous amount of gratitude for Yosef for basically saving the economy and the lives of the Egyptians, but it's with a new attitude. It's Ke'ilo, I don't even know who you're talking about. Yosef who? Okay. Amar Rav Yochanan. Okay, and now we continue. And now we are going to get immersed in a world of Agadata. But in this world of Agadata, there is going to be a couple of themes that really we're going to be hitting on again and again. I'm Rav Yochanan, so here we have a description of Yochanan Yurchaz Yamim Gidalta Eitzel Rabbi Oshia Beribi. Rabbi Oshia, right, I'm assuming, and I could be wrong, so I'm just cautioning, I'm assuming you were talking about the author of the Tosefta, meaning Rav Yochanan was one of the early generation Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael, and he studied under Rabbi Oshia, but for a very brief amount of time, right, 18 days described over here. But Rabbi Oshia was one of the leaders of his generation, one of the greats of his generation. In fact, Rashi writes, every time you see the word Beribi, Beribi is a description, it's a title. It means that, like, really, in his generation, there was nobody comparable. So, I spent 18 days by Rabbi Oshia Beribi, v'lo lamadati mimenu ala davar echad, b'mishnasenu. And for those days, I learned one Mishnah. Okay. So, Ketzad Ma'abrim Esa'arim Ba'alef. And what did I learn? I learned that our Mishnah, the first Mishnah of the fifth parak of Erevin, should be with an Aleph, not with an Ayin. So the Gemara also notes that when he was there for those days, so he also spent time with the students of Rabbi Yoshia, and he got to learn the nature and the wisdom of each one. So Leif Kol Echad Ve'Echad V'Chachmas Kol Echad Ve'Echad Gamar Gemara Lo Gamar. So the Gemara says, yeah, he got to learn the students very well. But in terms of actual learning, he schmoozed a lot. He interacted a lot. But in terms of actual learning, one Mishnah. Or the Gemara says, what you could just simply say is, look, from the students he learned a lot. But from Rabbi Oshia himself, one thing, which is the correct pronunciation of the first Mishnah of the fifth parak of Erevin. Or, again, just another simple way to approach all this is that he learned one thing in Mishnah, meaning when it comes to Brisos, and if I'm right, that this is Rabbi Oshia who organized the Tosefta, like he learned a lot of Brisos, and he learned a lot of Tosefta. But in terms of Mishnah, he only learned one thing, and that's our Mishnah, first Mishnah of the fifth parak. I'm Rav Yochanan Kishayinu Lomdim Taretz Rabbi Oshia Hanu Yoshim Arba Arba Ba'ama. Congestion, a lot of congestion, meaning we were so eager to hear the Rebbe say shir, we all cramped into a room, in fact, four people per amma. Hard to imagine, meaning that's really cramped quarters. In fact, the Gemara elsewhere says that generally speaking, we assume that every person takes up a full amma. So for four people to fit in one amma, that's obviously very tight. And when I was in YU, and I was in shir with the Rebbe Braunschweigel, he should have a continued refuah shlema. So he, so it was packed, totally packed. Okay, I have a very distinct memory of that. I'm a Rabbi Kishayinu Lomdin Toreitzel Rabbi Elazar Ben Shemuel Hainu Yosha Shisha Shisha Ba'ama. Gemara tells another story where once again packed in there in order to hear shir, six people per amma. Again, hard to really imagine. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yosha, Rabbi Bedora, Rabbi Meir Bedora. Rabbi Yosha in his generation was like Rabbi Meir in his generation. It's kind of a compliment. You'll see. It's a complicated compliment. So, Rama Rabbi Meir Bedora lo yachlu chaver v'lamod osof dato. Rabbi Meir, no one was able to follow him. He was so smart. He was really heads and shoulders above others. But in other words, but he also lacked the ability to communicate his ideas to others because he was so smart. All right, you meet people like that in this world. So, Rabbi Yoshia lo yachlu chaver v'lamod al sof dato. Same thing is true with Rabbi Yoshia, meaning he's just so smart, it was hard to fully comprehend what he was saying. Which, by the way, now we go back to the 18 days that he spent by Rabbi Yochanan spent by him, and he only learned one Mishnah. Now we could suggest that, in other words, he said more than that. It was just hard to understand him. I'm Rav Yochanan Liban Shavishon and Kipitzcho Sheulam. Earlier generations understood things much better. They were like the entrance to the ulam, right? We talked about this in day one of Erevin. The entrance to the ulam was 20 by 40. The entrance to the heichal 10 by 20. So the lave of the earlier generations, their hearts, meaning their understanding, their ability to understand, like the entrance to the ulam, they got it. But as the generations move on, their ability to understand diminishes. So they become like the entrance of the heichal. V'anu kemalei nekev machat sitkis. We're like a needle going into a crack in the wall. Meaning we understand so little. Rishonim, Rabbi Akiva, Achronim, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. Now, just in terms of identifying which generations are we calling Rishonim, which are we calling Achronim, Rabbi Akiva, that's Rishonim. Right? I can't even begin to tell you how many times in Shas we have Rabbi Akiva being like the paramount of understanding of Torah, his ability to understand Torah. So he's Rishonim. Then Achronim, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, which is really just, I think only one generation later. And Igadami Rishon Rav Elazar ben Shemuel Achronim Rabbi Yoshia Baribi. Or you could say that Rishonim is Rav Elazar ben Shammua, and then Achronim is Rav Oshia, and I believe that's also only one generation apart from one another. V'anu kemalei nekev machad sidkis. And we're like a needle going into a crack in the wall. Right? Meaning that even the needle doesn't even fit into the crack.
Who's we?
Right. That's it. That I'm not. I hope you're not asking what are we? No, I know. I understand your question. Right, your question is who's the speaker over here, who's making the statement? This is Rav Yochanan. Okay, which again he was able to study under Rabbi Yoshia 18 days of his life. I'm Rabbi Anan Kisichta Beguda LeGemara, and Abaye says. And you know what we're like now? Abaye is going later. Abaye is like third generation of Amoraim. Meaning if we could take the whole Amoraic period, I'm really simplifying, but it's fine. Meaning Rav and Shmuel is generation number one. Abaye is, so to say, generation number three. And Ravina, Ravashi, they're like the fifth generation. Again, it's an oversimplification. But basically, Abaye is like in the middle of the pack of generations. We, says Abaye, Kisichta Beguda. We're like a peg trying to fit into a hole where it can barely fit. LeGemara, Amar Rav Avanan ki it's beisa bekira lesvara. Now that's in terms of Gemara. What about analysis? So Rava says we're like a finger trying to fit into wax, and wax over here meaning hard wax. So in other words, I could say almost literally over here, we kind of like scrape the surface, but like we really. In terms of penetrating analysis, we don't have a lot of that. Am Ravashi anan ki yetzbisa bebira l'shichacha. And Ravashi, now we're at the end of the tkufa of the Amorayim. Ravashi says, now in terms of forgetting, we're like a pit. Oh, we love forgetting. Oh, we do. Well, we don't. I'm being facetious. But in other words, we forget a lot. Right? A lot goes in, but a lot comes out. Okay. You get the basic theme of all this, meaning niskatnu adaros. The diminishment of the generations, right? The earlier generations really had a much better grasp and handle of Torah than what we have. You know, we struggle. At least you see me do so daily. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav B'nei Yehuda, Shekpid Al Lashonam, Miskayim Torah Sam Biyadam, B'nei Gal Shalom, Ekpid Al Lashonam, Lo Niskayim Torah Sam Biyadam. Okay. And now, for the remainder of today's daf, we're in the world of Agarata, but we're going to hit now on another major theme, and that is precision of language, right? You want to know Torah well, you got to be very precise in the way you say it. Now I'm so self-conscious. But if you do not pronounce things correctly, so you're not going to have a good handle on Torah. And the Gemara over here actually analyzes the two schools of Torah in Eretz Yisrael, B'nai Yehuda versus B'nai Galo. Now, B'nai Yehuda is the southerners, meaning Yerushalayim, basically. And B'nai Galo are those up in the north. Tveria, Tzipori. Okay, now, it is somewhat of an irony, if I can be honest with you, that most of the greats of the period of the Amoraim all were living up north. Right? Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish. We can go back earlier. Rav Yehuda Hanasi, meaning after Chorban Abayis. Yes, there was communities that went somewhat to the south, Kerem B'Yavne, but for the most part, most people went up to the north. And yes, it is a bit of an irony that the Gemara here basically saying is that B'nai Yehuda, they were very careful about their language. They had a better handle on Torah. The northerners were not as careful, and therefore not as great. So, again, it's an irony that because most of the yeshiva communities in Eretz Yisrael moved up north. So, okay. B'nei Yehuda gamru, I'm sorry, niskamim Torah sam biyadam, b'nei galo de lo daika lishna, v'lo, I'm sorry, I skipped a line, I'm going to go back. So b'nei galo shalom, k'pid al shonam lo niskamim Torah sam biyadam. Mida b'kpeda talia milsa. Now, the way the Gemara first presented it, it's all an issue of k'peda. K'peda means being exacting, being like, being tight, being almost angry, if you will. Ela b'nei Yehuda d'daika lishna. It's not a question of being makbid. It's a question of precision and being careful. B'nei Yehuda are medayik. They're very precise. Lishna u'misnachlu simana. And furthermore, they also give mnemonics. Right? You see this all the time in the daf. Right? Before the Gemara gives us a whole discussion. So not always, but sometimes the Gemara gives us mnemonics to help us remember. Okay? So and again, we're not... we're not used to memorizing, especially now in such a digital age. We're just really not used to memorizing, but memorization was a key component to Torah learning. And so they memorized, and part of the memorization tools and keys was mnemonics. The B'nai Galil, A, were not precise about the Torah they learned, and not careful about the words they used. B, also did not give simanim, so therefore the Torah was not as strong. B'nai Yehuda gamru mechad rabba, niskamit Torah sam biyadam. B'nai Galil delo gamru mechad rabba, lo niskamit Torah sam biyadam. A third aspect, which is that in the B'nai Galil, they did not learn from one Rebbe. They learned from multiple Rebbes. Every Rebbe's got his own style. And so, if you jump from Rebbe to Rebbe, so really, it can get a little bit confusing. Because then you hear a change of style, and you're just simply not used to it. In Yehuda, the B'nai Yehuda, they always learned from one Rebbe. That was their tradition. And so, therefore, you got to hear one style of Torah. Ravina Amar B'nai Yehuda Degal Masechta Niskayim Torah Sam Yadam B'nai Gal Delo Gal Masechta Lo Niskayim Torah Sam Yadam. Gal Masechta, what does that mean? So Rashi over here gives two explanations of what that means. One pshat, says Rashi, is they taught others. Meaning not only did they learn Torah, but they taught Torah to others, and that was a successful tool for learning for B'nai Yehuda. B'nai Gal did not teach others as much, and so therefore that's pshat one in Rashi. Rashi also offers another pshat, meaning analysis. B'nai Yehuda gave more analysis of what they learned. B'nai Galil, less analysis. Okay. David, Galil Masechta. Shaul, lo Galil Masechta. David, let's go with Rashi's first pshat. David taught Torah to others. And so therefore, he was a true Torah scholar. Shaul, again, I'm careful about how I'm going to say this, but not as much.
Less.
Okay. David de Galil Masechta Ksiv Bei Yira'uchi Yira'uni V'yismechu Shaul de lo Galil Masechta Ksiv Uvechol, good question of how to read the pasuk, but Uvechol Asher Yifne Yarshia. Okay. Strong language describing Shaul and his inferior Torah study to that of David HaMelech. I'm Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says, "How do I know that he was forgiven over that sin?" Now, when I was preparing the Gemara, I was thinking, "Oh, we're talking about David." No, we're talking about Shaul. Meaning, and what was Shaul's big sin? Nov Ira Kohanim. Right. So when David was running away, so Nov city of Kohanim. So they took David in, and they basically. I know, but I mean the Gemara says it. I'm sorry. By the way, you're right. Meaning, I'm saying over Rashi. It could be referring to another Ovo, but Rashi says over your Kohanim. So anyway, so they took David in, and so Shaul accused Nov, city of Kohanim, to be harboring a fugitive of justice. And not just a fugitive of justice, but a rebel to the king. And so he felt justified in killing off the entire city. Okay. So, terrible, terrible act of Shaul. And he was forgiven. Okay, this takes us all the way to the end of Shmuel Aleph. Shmuel's dead. Okay. But Shaul talks to Shmuel. Right? Remember? Right? Okay, good. Everybody, he conjures him up. And Shmuel says to Shaul, right? Right, right. That was the first thing he said. Right. But another thing he said is, tomorrow you and your children will be with me. Right? And Shmuel's already on the other side. So, and the Gemara's understanding is the imi b'mechitzasi. You will be on my side of the partition, which means that when your time comes, you will not be outside, you will be inside. As if I know what I'm talking about. But I have a feeling, so, you know, some of you do understand. Amar Rabbi Abba, Iiga Damashalu Livnei Yehuda, Dedaik Lishnei, Ma'avrin Tanan, O Ma'avrin Tanan. So good. So let me ask you a simple question. So the B'nai Yehuda, they're so careful about how they learn the Mishnah. So how do they learn our Mishnah? Meaning with an Aleph, with an Ayin, meaning isn't that how we got to this whole discussion to begin with? So achuzu tanan or achuzu tanan, and also that Mishnah Becharos. Yeah, okay, good. If you don't remember, I'm not proud to tell you. I also don't remember the Mishnah Becharos that describes one of the mumim, one of the blemishes of a kohen, is instead of having two beitzim, so the kohen only has one beitza, and there is a way of manipulating, basically a physical examination, to see if whether or not there may be an additional beitza that just simply didn't descend. And the Mishnah Becharos goes on to describe the physical examination that was actually used. So the word that the Mishnah uses over there to describe the physical examination is the word achuzu, with an aleph or with an ayin. So again, B'nai Yehuda, you're so careful about how you use your language. So can you help us with the Mishnah here in Erevin and the Mishnah over there in Becharos? So the Gemara's answer is Yadai Shalino v'amrile Ika didni ma'avrin, v'ika didni ma'avrin, ika didni achuzu, v'ika didni achuzu. So the B'nai Yehuda basically say, yeah, correct. Meaning, because we're so careful about the language, so we know that there are two distinct ways in which you could say it. Meaning, we're familiar, we're aware that there's an issue in both of these Mishnayos, and we just simply, as part of our tradition, we have both as an option.
Wait, Rabbi, you must reject the Mishnah. He wasn't meticulous about which pronunciation.
Also, remember, a lot of this was Torah Shabbat Peh, meaning, uh-huh. You know, it was transmitted orally from one to the other. So, you know, a lot of it depends on how you heard it. Okay. B'nai Yehuda Daikalishna Ma'i Detanya. Okay, and now, we're going to go through a little bit more today. We're basically going to give example after example of precision in language and imprecision in language and how it manifested. So first we start off with the B'nai Yehuda. So a member of the B'nai Yehuda was selling a talis. Amalei man gavan talisech. So a simple question, well, what color is it? Amalehu kitrajin alei adama. Now he could have said the word yarok. The problem with the word yarok, and you'll see it every single time, yarok sometimes means green. Yarok sometimes means yellow. Okay. And if I say yarok, so I'm leaving it off ambiguous. So instead of saying the word yarok, you know what I say? Kitrajin ade alei adama. Like vegetables in the ground, meaning green. But he says it with unbelievable clarity. Right? We usually say it's beets. But that wouldn't help our cause over here because we're looking for green. So I'm going to avoid saying the word beets.
Maybe before it, right?
Maybe, perhaps. That would assume I know. B'nei galo d'lo daik elishna ma'hi de ha'hu bar galilo d'ha'va ka'azil v'amar lehu v'amar lehu. I'm sorry. And as opposed to that, we have a person from the galo. He was walking around v'amar lehu amar laman. And he was trying to convey that he was interested in buying Amar. He mumbled. He stuttered. He did not say the word Amar. He kind of just said the word Mar. Now, Amru le Galila Shota, you foolish Galilean. Chamar le Mirkav. When you're saying the word Mar, what do you want? Do you want a donkey? Do you want a Chamar? Oh, Chamar le Mishte, or do you want wine? I often wonder, because this happens to us a lot, where the Gemara says the word Chamar with a Ches, and it's either donkey or wine. Now, basically, I'm guessing based on context, and usually I get it right. But it's clear from our Gemara over here that in terms of pronunciation, there's a distinction in terms of how it should be pronounced. I don't know the difference. Amar lamilbash, or do you want amar with an ayin? You want wool? Oh, imar liiskase, or you want a sheep? Right, the word imra is a sheep. Okay, so another example of how the B'nai Yehuda, when they talk, they're very precise. The B'nai Gala, when they talk, very imprecise. Okay, we're going to pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Tomorrow, get ready. Oh, such good Gemara's coming up. Two Bruria stories coming up for tomorrow. Okay, as if I need to sell tomorrow's daf, but, you know, preview for upcoming events. Okay, please come again.